This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And you're joined by myself, Mark, tonight, and
Rachel is here.
And it's Claudine at the panel.
So tonight we're going to shake things up a little bit on tonight's show and do a little bit of a reverse order to what we normally do. We are changing. We have a couple of guests that are going to be joining us on the show. We're going to actually steal Rowena Allen for a little bit of the show. But we also have the Reverend Robert Stringer on the phone, who will be joining us to talk about some things happening in the Uniting Church. So we're going to change it around. We'll do holiday of the week at the end of the show, so you'll just have to wait with bated breath to work out what holiday of the week is going to be this week.
If you have any questions for us on the show tonight, make sure you send us a message, 0427-JOY949, or email onair@joy.org.au. We would love to hear any questions or any comments that you have on our show about our show tonight. Definitely.
So we have actually got Robert on the phone. So good evening, Robert.
Good evening, Mark. Good evening, Ro.
Rose, she's going to jump back in the studio in just a minute. She's just having a quick refresher. Okay.
She's doing a double shift.
And here she is.
So, yes. So thank you, Robert, for joining us to talk tonight. We're going to start off, we're going to talk about the Daring Conference. So do you want to just give us a little bit of a quick rundown on what the Daring Conference is, Robert, to start us off?
Yeah, we're having the conference here in Melbourne. The Daring Conference has started in 1994 in Adelaide, and every 2 years since then, the Uniting Network of Gay, Lesbian, Transgender, Bisexual and Sexual Diversity people and their friends, families and supporters have been gathering to dare to do something different in terms of the GLTBI and diverse sexualities within the church and the community. So this year it's daring to reach out, honouring our diversity, connecting with interfaith, with our communities of linguistic diversity, and the intersex and other ones that are not normally included. So it's a special attempt to reach out in that way. And that'll be on the 10th to the 13th of June, which is the June long weekend at our Centre for Theology and Ministry.
And we've got Rowena Allen here, who's just on her second hour after Stand Up Straight. Rowena Allen, you're actually, I believe, opening the conference.
I am.
Yeah, why is this important to you?
Well, hi, Robert. How are you going?
Hi there, Ro.
Robert's been an ally in this forever, and I think he and I were at the very first Daring Conference when I was a baby dyke, wow. I think I can say, back then. Well, I was a bit younger anyway. So for me, it's important. It's important to come back now as commissioner and open it. I've been the chair of Uniting Network in my career, and so this is really exciting to come back with Daring in Melbourne, me as the commissioner, and I get to open it. So it'll be old school week, really, for me.
So it's like a bit of a turning of the roles in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, with a really, really friendly crowd.
So can you tell us a bit more about Uniting Network and its what it is and what it sets out to do? Either Robert or Ro?
I'll have a go, well, Robert.
you have a go, Sexually diverse group, their friends, families and supporters, but you might like to add to that.
That's pretty much it. And I think what's important about it is a national network across Uniting Church. And, you know, there are really supportive congregations in all parts and in all states. And the conference moves around the nation and it's not always in Melbourne, but this time it's in Melbourne. So there's a committee of United Network, of which Robert has been a very, very strong ally on for just, I think, about ever. You know, it's been great. The conferences have grown in numbers over the years. People still see it as really important. For our family, you know, we're not regular church goers anymore. We probably just go to Uniting Network events and Daring and a couple of church services where I talk and things. But there's a lot of people like that that aren't, they're on the real fringes, on the outs, and they just come to those really inclusive spaces. And I think for other people who, you know, live in a congregation day in, day out, and they might be the only rainbow family or LGBTI person, coming together as a national network is an incredibly empowering experience, always being the Queen's birthday, which we all think is pretty funny, and come together and support each other to go back into their congregations and be the beacons.
And does your role as commissioner involve much work with faith communities?
It does a bit. I'm certainly working on a project around gay conversion therapy, you know, which is the, for those who don't know, is the idea of, you know, you can pray away the gay. I'm a survivor of gay conversion therapy, so clearly it works.
Congratulations,
yes, we all
on
know.
That.
Yeah, thank
We've
you. Thank
quite
you.
A few people from.
Yeah, so yes. That, you know, that's, it's really important. And in the Victorian government has done some work to strengthen the Health Services Commissioner's ability to investigate some of this, but it's 10% legislation, it's 90% education. Mm. And so we need to keep, you know, supporting United Network or Free to Be or Queer Muslims or, you know, all these other groups to say we need to provide safe spaces in the intersections, in the faith communities where people are and people want to, you know, express not only their sexuality but their spirituality. Mm.
So will you be hanging around for the entire conference yourself, or are you just able to do the openings?
Oh, well, my diary is above my pay grade. Somebody
yes.
else manages my diary these days. I hope to be there. I have a family too, my partner and our daughter. We're registered for the whole weekend.
Yeah.
I think there's two other work events I have to do during the long weekend, but rest of the time our family will be there.
Amazing.
It's wonderful.
And we're looking forward to catching, because this is another time we get to catch up with our Western Australian friends and our South Australian friends, and it's a real catch-up space.
Too right.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And a special thank you to the Commissioner for Gender and Sexuality, Rowena Allen, who stayed on for a bit after her stand-up straight slot to talk to us about the Daring Conference. And we're here with one of the organisers of that conference, Robert Stringer, who talked to us a bit more about the Daring Conference being run by the Uniting Network, what the conference is about and who's behind it and who will be appearing at this event. So, Robert, can you remind us, when is this year's conference? It's coming up very soon.
Yeah, it's coming up at the long weekend from the 10th to the 12th of June. So it's a Friday evening, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. And then on Monday, the interstate visitors, there'll be a bit of socialising. So that's the date, and that'll be at the Centre for Ministry in Parkville.
And do you expect many interstate visitors, or will it mostly
well,
be...
Well, I'm not sure how many interstate visitors. We're expecting about 60 people there. Hopefully there'll be some late registrations, so hopefully there might be 70 or 80.
Ah, yes, and so we should...
That's our hope, anyway.
We will have information on the website, but do tell us when can people register up until... I think you're not...
They can register, up until... about the end of the first weekend in June. Then we need to know numbers for catering purposes. We're open for those registrations until then.
So we've had a look at the program, and as you said, the theme this year is Daring to Reach Out, honouring our diversity, and that's including people from cultural and linguistic diverse cultures as well. Is that a new thing for the Daring Conference to talk about, I guess, our multicultural heritage as well as LGBTI issues?
Yeah, this is the idea of reaching out, was to reach out to the linguistic diverse communities within our own church. Not an easy task because they're generally much more conservative and are still struggling to come to terms with the gender issues. And we're also reaching out through our Uniting World. That's our relationship to our overseas churches. And they also are very conservative and not showing a lot of interest. But we do have people at our conference from Papua New Guinea and from Samoa. For example, Ken Moala, who embraces the Fa'afini, a Samoan cultural identity that embodies the spirit of male and female characteristics. Mm. He's a founding member of the Samoan Fa'afini Association, and he holds a chiefly title of Fia'ai Litoa, which is from the Lipa district of Upolu in Samoa. And then we also have Sayo Barabe, who's a 39-year-old public servant from Papua New Guinea, and those together with also one of our ministers, Reverend Sunny Valagi, will be on a panel talking about what it means to be sexually diverse in those linguistically different communities.
So the Uniting Church has, and its predecessors, the Methodist and Presbyterian churches, have had this long history of engagement with the Pacific. Are there other, what other countries or cultures are represented in the Uniting Church these days?
Well, we have a lot of Asian cultures, like Korean, Indonesian, and at least those are the two that are the largest of these linguistically diverse communities. So I don't know of any who are coming from those communities, but we're also reaching out to the Muslim community, and we have Noor Wasami, who is a Somali-born Muslim who has come out as gay within the Muslim community and is held in high regard. So we hope also to understand what it might be like to be young and queer in the Muslim community.
Yes, we've had the privilege of having Noor on our program as well in the last year. So is this also another new direction is engaging with LGBT people from other faiths?
That's right. We're reaching out in that way as well. And then we're also reaching out to those who are coming out with a different gender diversity, like Tony Painter, who started out as male and has now taken on female after being severely going through mental health issues, being homeless, and coming out and is now researching gender identity and self-management in the gradual transition to from male to female.
Yes, and just thinking, Tony Painter is also another familiar face around the Joy Studio. So there's a lot of.
So you can see we've got some pretty good lineup there.
Yes. And what? How long have you, Robert, been involved in the Uniting Network?
I've been involved in the Uniting Network since it was inception in 1994. I was then Secretary for Social Justice within the Uniting Church Assembly at the time, because we're in social justice within the church, this was a very serious social justice issue, and so I have been fully supportive of this community since long before that, even way back when I first came to Australia in 1979. I was supporting gay and lesbian families who were gathering together for support for one another with their friends and family over in Perth in WA. So I have a long history of support for the GLTBI community. And also because of what was happening in the church in the late 90s, I did my doctorate, a doctorate of ministry through San Francisco Theological Seminary on the place of GLTBI Christians in the Uniting Church.
So can you remind us what was going on in the 90s? It was a bit of a different place for the Uniting Church, and what were the issues?
It certainly was a different place, where one of our most senior ministers, Reverend Dorothy McRae McMahon, came out at the 1997 assembly in Perth, and that was certainly sort of shook the foundations. When you have such a senior minister who was my boss, the director of the Commission for Mission, coming out with a partner.
And at that point, were you already involved in the LGBTI community?
Yeah, very much so. I was involved with them, as I said, before I was the Secretary for Social Justice, when I was the Consultant for Social Justice in the Synod of WA way back in the early 80s. So I've been involved, for 36 years now.
Have you seen in the last 20 to 30 years, has it been easier for people in the Uniting Church from LGBTI backgrounds to, I suppose, step up? And it sounds like there's through allies such as yourself who have been paving the way for these discussions in the last few decades. Has it been easier for has there been more room for LGBTI people to, I guess, take more of that leadership?
Yes, there's a lot of our clergy have come out in that time. Probably there's maybe a dozen to 20, nobody knows the exact number, who have come out as gay and lesbian and or have partners. That's been a slow process and often a very painful process. There has emerged a number of congregations who are well known to be very open and embrace gay and lesbian people, particularly congregations like Pitt Street in Sydney. There's a number of congregations who have been able to make a safe place, but there's still a lot of congregations who are not safe, especially some that belong to the more conservative network of our church. And last time we had the conference 6 years ago here in Melbourne, we were daring to be united. We were developing sacred ceremonies for gay and lesbian relationships. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's really skyrocketed since then is the emergence of marriage equality within the Australian community as something that's accepted by well over 70% of the Australian population. And I suppose the Uniting Church, along with perhaps the Anglican Church, have been supportive of that. But still, we have a lot of pockets of resistance.
That was the Family Maiden Aunt by Judy Small, a special request from Avril Hannah-Jones, who is one of the speakers at the Uniting Network Daring Conference. And you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, where we're talking to one of the organisers of that conference, Robert Stringer. Robert, so Avril and Jeff Thompson, another theologian, will be presenting a couple of sessions on the Uniting Church and marriage. Can you tell us a bit about what that's about?
Yeah, well, as part of the conference, there will be workshops, and one of the workshops is being led by Avril and Jeff Thompson. They are members of the representatives of the National Assembly Doctrine Working Group that has been tasked by the church to look at marriage and how we define it and how that might be related to marriage equality as the debate is emerging in the church. And again, the church is finding this a difficult issue to come to terms with because, like the Conservative government under Howard, the church immediately followed Howard and made the decision that marriage was between a male and a female. So instead of having a sort of openness from the past, we suddenly had in the 90s this redefinition, well, this definition of marriage is only male and female. And once you've got something like that on the books, it really takes a lot of work to shift it, because you've got to re-theologize and challenge the thinking that comes through the tradition and how it embraces the changes that are taking place in society and in our understanding of what it means to be in same-gender relationships.
So where is that discussion up to with the Uniting Church? Is there is it a discussion paper, or are there recommendations, or are there...
Well, there has been a discussion paper, but it didn't come out clearly enough as a way forward. It took a really traditional sort of systematic theology approach to the task, and I don't think it really examined people's experience and what we scientifically know about what makes people attracted to people of the same gender. So there's still a lot of work to be done, both in the science and in the theology of what it means to extend marriage to two persons, because two persons, whether they're heterosexual or gay or lesbian or intersex or whatever, are persons who are very capable of a close, monogamous, loving, caring relationship, and that needs to be looked at, from a theological perspective. And even Catholic theologians have said that a gay or lesbian relationship is a relationship of two people who, in a loving relationship, are attracted to each other sexually.
So, if the Australian government were somehow to legislate for marriage equality in the near future, if that were to happen, where would that leave the Uniting Church?
Well, the Uniting Church, like nearly all the churches, would be caught with, dare I say, with their pants down, in the sense that they probably haven't done the necessary theological thinking to be able to shift people theologically and biblically, in terms of love being the core, the core understanding of what the Christian faith is about. So we would be caught, and also a lot of clergy like Avril Hannah-Jones and myself, we struggle at present. I was taking a marriage a couple of months ago, and the young couple wanted, as part of the marriage service, to say, their understanding of marriage was between two persons, and because of the law and because of the Uniting Church, we had to talk about marriages between a man and a woman. But at the same time, they wanted to acknowledge that as young people, they differed from what the church was thinking. So I found that very interesting, that a young couple wanted to say that as part of their marriage commitment.
And does the Uniting Church, are there people who celebrate, are there any provisions for celebrating same-sex relationships outside
of
marriage?
Yes, there are provisions, but the law, LAW, of the church is that it must not resemble a marriage service. So the Uniting Network at its conference 3 years ago, six years ago, launched a book of sacred union ceremonies. And as we launched it, we're sort of preempting the marriage equality debate, and we put in the marriage service in a degendered form, and then put a little note that we're not legally allowed to use it in that form at present. But, we're hoping that things will move on. Otherwise, there'll be clergy who will certainly take the option of celebrating same-gender relationships if it became law. I would certainly be one of them, and I'm sure Avril would be one. In fact, I heard Avril was not happy about taking marriages until marriage equality became the norm.
And how hard is it to change church law in the Uniting Network, Robert?
it's not difficult in the Uniting Network, but it's difficult within the Uniting Church, because you've got to be able to take a well-argued case to the assembly, which happens every 3 years, and you know, be able to have it debated by the wide range of whoever was elected from parishes and presbyteries of the Uniting Church. And on the whole, this is generally being a progressive assembly, but it's always concerned about the effects of things like marriage equality on particularly our Aboriginal church, the Congress, and also on the linguistically diverse communities who the Conservatives use to bolster their case to oppose any changes.
But as we've seen, your conference coming up does have quite a few people speaking, coming from those called communities as well as the LGBTI community. So I think that's really great bridge building help going on there.
That's what we're hoping to do.
Can you remind us about the details of the conference? It's an opening night and two full days. So do you take registrations just for the whole conference, or are there a day?
People can book for just one day. There are a number of options there on the website. So you just type in to any Google Uniting Network and it'll come up with, certainly when I typed it in, that was the first thing that came up on the Google search. And you'll find the conference is the first thing listed under that heading.
And we'll put a link to that on our Facebook and Twitter accounts as well.
Fantastic, yeah. And if you can take the image that's there and put it on your Facebook as well.
Sure.
And there's so a lovely coloured image there.
We've got a couple of weeks to register, I believe.
That's right. Yeah, we'll take registrations.
And is the conference open to everybody, Robert? Is it just for the Uniting Church members? Or,
well, we do have people who come from other church communities, particularly sometimes the Metropolitan Community Church. In fact, when we've been in Sydney, we actually met at the Metropolitan Community Church 1 year. And I know occasional Anglican and others do come, but it's mainly for members of the Uniting Church.
But
it's pretty much open to whoever would like to come.
Yep, so it's open to anybody.
Yes.
Great. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us this evening, Robert. It's been a pleasure, and hopefully we've been able to give lots of information to people who might be listening that are interested in the Daring Conference. So just a reminder that it is from the 10th to the 12th of June on that long weekend. And you can just Google Uniting Network and hopefully you'll find it. You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
Thank you to Brad, who sent a message to us just clarifying that fact about the changing, Howard government changing the Marriage Act, actually happened in 2004, not in the 90s, but it is, and making the point that, well, that was a redefinition of what we consider traditional marriage. I mean, marriage has been redefined for thousands of years, and in terms of marriage equality, this is something that people like Robert Stringer, I guess, in the Uniting Church have been working on for decades, for at least 30 years. We were speaking to Robert Stringer earlier about the Daring Conference, and if you're just tuning in now and you've missed that, do look at our Facebook page and our podcast, which will be up in a couple of days with details about that conference. As we said at the start, we've done a bit of a back to front this week. We've had our main interview for up till now, and now we're going back to the start.
All right, that's right. We have our holy day of the week. We're ending our show with the holy day tonight. This is the Baha'i celebration of the Declaration of the Bab. So Baha'is around the world will celebrate on May 22nd as the Declaration of the Bab. So the Bab is seen as the messenger of God who was to tell the world about the coming of the latest manifestation of God. There are many stories surrounding the declaration of the BAB, but I'm going to let you know about the most commonly known story that there is. Okay, so here goes. Should I put on my reading voice?
Do, please.
In 1783, a man named Sheikh Ahmad Ashhai, at the age of 40, decided to travel through Persia, teaching that the advent of the coming of the latest manifestation of God was near. During this time, there was great discontent in the East, as prominent clerics were acting in a way which was damaging to Islam. As he spread his message, his wisdom and knowledge impressed many, and they were eager to learn from him. Mullah Hussain was a student... Hussein was a student who went on to teach the message of the coming of the manifestation of God. And on May 22nd, 1844, having travelled far in his search for the Promised One, Hussein sent his family to the mosque for prayer in the city of Shiraz as he wandered around. And while walking outside the gates of the city, a few hours before sunset, he was unexpectedly greeted by a young man. Hussein believed this young man must have been a disciple of Sheikh Ahmad, who had heard of his arrival and came to greet him in Shiraz. Even so, the manner of his greeting was astonishing. Hussein joined this man in his home and they spoke for hours, and during this time he believed the young man to be the Bab, but to test him he had to ask two things. Firstly, to produce an in-depth treatise, which is a detailed commentary, regarding concealed teaching of the Sheikh Ahmad and Siad Kazim, and the second was to unravel the mysteries of Suri of Yosef. This was a chapter of the Quran. So Mullah Hussein recounted the following. I have previously requested Siad Kazim in private to write a commentary on that same surah, which he refused, saying, "This is verily beyond me. He, that great one, who comes after me will, unasked, reveal it for you. That commentary will constitute one of the weightiest testimonies of his truth and one of the clearest evidences of the loftiness of his position." So Mullah Hussein asked his host to comment on the treatise he had written. The result of that request only further astonished him. He graciously complied with my wish. He opened the book, glanced at certain passages, closed it, and began to address me. Within a few minutes, he had, with characteristic vigor and charm, unraveled all its mysteries and resolved all of its problems. Having to my entire satisfaction accomplished with so short a time the task I had expelled for him to perform, he further expounded me to certain truths which could be found neither in the reported sayings of the Imams of the faith, nor in the writings of the Sheikh Ahmad or Siad Kazim. These truths, which I had never heard before, seemed to be endowed with refreshing vividness and power. He then proceeded to say, "Now is the time to reveal the commentary of the Surah of Joseph." He took up his pen and with incredible rapidity revealed the entire Surah of Mulk, the first chapter of his commentary of the Surah of Joseph. Hussein described that the Bab did not pause once until the entire Surah of Mulk was completed. Finally, when he begged to leave to depart, he recounted the following. "This night, he, the Bab, declared, this very hour will, in the days to come, be celebrated as one of the greatest and most significant of all festivals. Render thanks to God for having graciously assisted you to attain your heart's desire and for having quaffed from the sealed wine of his utterance." From that day forward, Sayyid al-Muhammad referred to himself as the Bab, and Mullah Hussein became his first disciple. Although the Bab was indeed the promised one foretold by Sheikh Ahmad and Siad Kazim, he taught that he was but the herald of another messenger, Baha'u'llah, who would appear very soon after him, and the power of whose revelation would far exceed any previously sent down by God. The day the Bab declared his mission is now, as he promised, celebrated by Baha'is around the world as one of the greatest and most significant of all festivals. So there you go. That's the story of the declaration of the Bab. So that is what the Baha'is around the world will be celebrating on May 22nd.
Well, it's actually a week for many deep theological festivals.
There is a lot.
So this Sunday is also... Trinity Sunday in the Christian Church, and in the last couple of weeks we've been talking about Ascension and Pentecost, which is when first when Jesus goes up into heaven and then when the Holy Spirit comes down. So the significance of this for Christians is that Christians believe, or are supposed to believe, that God exists in three persons, which is already a strange grammatical construct. So God exists as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, or what some more modern people call the Creator, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, or some people will say Creator, Redeemer, Sanctifier. So there's been some debate about whether the Holy Spirit is actually male or female, or even genderless. But there's a bit of a joke that goes around in churches that Trinity Sunday is such a difficult... The Holy Trinity is such a difficult concept to explain that when you're studying theology, or when you go out into your new church for your first time, you've got to preach on the Trinity, because it's a kind of a baptism of fire, as it were. It's a sort of thing that people throw on you when you're a new minister. So it's a, in terms of language and philosophy, it's a very strange thing to try and explain, even though it's at the core of the Christian faith. But I find that, you know, sometimes when words fail, music is another way to get to understand things or to relate to things. So we're going to hear a very classic hymn about the Trinity, Holy, 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 performed by Sufjan Stevens.
You are listening to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and we have had a bumper of a show. That was Mark's word for it.
We have two guests, two holy days. Jeez.
How many different topics? And now for something completely different.
Absolutely.
We were looking for music to end this hour with, and I said, well, shall we talk about Eurovision? Because everybody else is. And Mark found that we're not supposed to talk... Eurovision isn't supposed to touch on politics or religion, even though this year's winner was actually a very political song, but...
Yeah, religion and politics are the two things that songs shouldn't be talking about on Eurovision. So, you know, it kind of makes it a little bit hard for us to work with sometimes. We're sort of scratching around thinking, well, what's from the Eurovision archives, which are extensive, that might have a bit of a relationship. But we've got a slightly political entry this year.
But was it... is this to do with the origin of Eurovision as it having a sort of political... not a political purpose, but it came about during the Cold War, where it was trying to... Was it an attempt at... I think it was an attempt at being at trying to promote peace between different sides.
Yeah, and so I only heard this on the radio myself this week, so don't quote me on it because I'm quoting them on it. I heard that the reason why Eurovision was started was to be somewhat of a bridge from like the east to the west, to put some culture back in Berlin and such after the Berlin Wall was put up, and it was, yeah, so like a bridging, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but...
But you're talking about post-war Europe, you've got the Cold War commencing, so you've got the Iron Curtain coming down, so to speak. So it was about trying to get Europe to be unified in some way or form, and music was the way it was done. So Eurovision has perhaps taken on a life of its own and its own quirkiness and rules and all sorts of things, emphasised.
And like Europe now includes Australia? I just don't get that.
Okay.
All right,
I've heard this conversation
explain.
A lot lately. Eurovision has always included countries that are not part of Europe. It's always included Middle Eastern countries, some Asian countries, and they have now welcomed Australia into... that midst. And look, we are still part of the Commonwealth, so we kind of are, you know, Europe's niece or nephew or non-gender specific child,
family relation.
We're probably the illegitimate child, but let's not go there.
So for those who may not have caught up with the backstory to this year's song, winning song, 1944 by Jarmila, it actually refers to an incident in Crimea in 1944, which was... So this is a song by a Ukrainian artist, which is about an atrocity committed by Russians, and it's now been interpreted as possibly referring to current difficulties between Russia and the Ukraine. So we'll be going out with 1944 by Jamila. Good night from myself, Claudine.
Good night from Rachel.
And good night from Mark.
And the Woods are coming up next. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.